Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
A dog's purpose causes concern. Is Abby Lee Miller headed to the big house? Dina Lohan weighs in on Lindsay's stance with Islam. And we look at NBC's winter press tour, from Will and Grace to This Is Us. Scott Moore rejoins the rants right now. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting across from Grant's Rants returnee, producer and host, Scott Moore.
Hey, it's like good to be back. I'm like the returning champion or something on Jeopardy. It's like, I'm back for another day.
We had such a good episode and we have a lot in common. And I just thought it was great to have you back on.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to talk about. We're going to try to keep this show a politically safe zone. I need a break.
I need a break. I do political podcasts every single week, and I'm doing another thing hopefully next week with Jimmy Kimmel. They're doing an episode with politics, and so I can't seem to escape it. So it'd be nice to have a political free zone. It's just very hard these days.
It is. But I think everyone, no matter which side you're on, or where you're marching these days, you need to have a little bit of a break from everything. Because to me, it's so consuming. I had nowhere to turn yesterday. It was a long work day, and I had nothing to dull my time with.
Pouring with rain in Los Angeles, and it's like you couldn't go outside to get away. You were just kind of stuck.
Twitter,
you're trapped.
Everything that was trending was unlikable. So I'm like, this is not my day. I ended up going to a great play with Mark J. Freeman, who has been on this show. He works at a theater, the Odyssey Theater, and he brought me over to see a show last night, which was the best thing I could have done. You're forced to unplug.
Right.
Turn off
your phone, get off the internet, get away from social media, and really just watch. And something live in person, there's nothing that beats that.
2 hours of really a very deep, minimalist performance. It was really entertaining and great. So before we get into the topics, I teased last episode that there would be an announcement for the future of the show. Grant's Rants will continue on all major podcasting platforms, but now there'll be an additional way to get a little bit more bonus content and to support the show. Many podcasters use Patreon.com, and I am going to start to use it as well. You can find more information on Patreon.com/GrantsRants. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And I'm kind of having a little bit of a soft launch. And then around coming up, we'll really be pushing it a little bit more. I mean, I'm not looking at my bills paid. You know what I mean? It's not that. It's just to kind of cover the cost of what I've had to invest and continue to monthly to keep the show alive. And, you know, it's very popular in the podcasting community, and I just want to see what comes of it. So I hope that you'll support me and join me, and there'll be a lot of incentives and bonus content for you to enjoy over on Patreon.com/GrantsRants. Okay. Yes, let's talk about this viral video that if you've been living under a rock, you haven't seen, but it's spread everywhere. Universal Pictures, A Dog's Purpose. This movie's coming out January 27th.
Right, this coming up on Friday for us here. So they're living in the past.
Yes.
The time this comes out.
So there's alleged animal abuse in this TMZ video. May I just say that my views and opinions do not reflect those of Comcast, NBC, Universal.
let's got your legal notice here. I'm
this video, for those of you who haven't seen it, a German Shepherd dog didn't want to be put into a simulated river scene, and it struggled to not perform and perhaps wasn't interested.
Yes, that's how we could say that was basically the situation. And look, I'm personally a huge pet and dog lover. I have two dogs at home and adopted them from a local shelter here in Los Angeles about 6 years ago, and they were there for several months. So for me, it does hit home personally, and I also know how spoiled my dogs are and how they don't do anything. They're horribly trained. But look, I think it's – and this is part of the thing, and I'm not going into politics again or anything, but it's part of the way the world is now, that everything is connected and everybody has an opinion and things are hyped and so quickly now without really going into the facts. Yes, I think it's very important to look into exactly what happened in the situation – because as we know, like, training animals in something is hugely important and has been for people for years. I mean, it's not even a new thing, and you mm-hmm. always see the things at the end of movies, like, no animal was harmed in the filming of this production and that sort of thing, and that's been going on for years for movies and TV shows. So it is very important, and I do think people need to look into it. But I also want to make sure that people don't jump to conclusions that this dog was hurt in any way or uncomfortable. Yes, he may not have done what they wanted to do, but this guy who was a trainer was there doing what he was paid to do. I was going to say trained to do, but that's the right word. What he was paid to do, and that's part of his job to help get these dogs to perform. Yes, it did not look very good in this video on what was happening and kind of forcing this dog to do something that he probably should not have done and should have let it go. And again, the problem is now is that anywhere you go, you can be filmed or recorded with phones and everything. So really nothing is really private anymore. So I think people do need to be very cognizant of that, especially working on a set, and that they do need to protect animals to the highest ability, just like any other, like people working on sets and everything need to be protected, and that's most important. So I think we do need to look into that and see what happened.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're reviewing. That's the word they kept using.
Yeah.
They're reviewing tapes, and the director, I think, should be the one held responsible
absolutely.
In this case.
Yes.
He claims that he was in Video Village, which is a series of televisions and our screens.
And watching and cuts there from the actual set.
Yeah, he wasn't there to make the call. But then there's other conflicting reports that say that he was there, and then the Animal Humane Association, they had a representative on site
right,
there.
Which they usually do for any of these type of filmings.
Right. But I think to your point, Scott, it's important to mention that, you know, that guy who was, or maybe it was a woman who was...
It was a woman, okay, I'm sorry,
No problem. That trainer with the dog, that is why they're there. They're being paid to do that. They have to have a call from a higher up, like a director, to be able to say, like, all right, we're not going to do this. But that person really was just doing their job.
No, and she was. And I think, again, we jump into the sensationalism right away. But yes, it's very important. We need to get the facts, make sure that that these dogs were treated humanely and properly. And it's a shame because it does sort of, for me personally, and I'm sure for a lot of other people, kind of taint the idea of this movie, because it looked like such a great concept, and I was actually looking forward to seeing it as a dog lover, and it's just such a sweet movie, and to think that now that's sort of now going to be in the back of people's minds if they're still thinking of going to this movie, and it's a shame. So I hope that they can get a resolution to this and make sure that things like this don't happen again.
Right, yeah.
And,
let's
and
use
again,
this as an example.
Right, as this should be used as an example, and that director should take the responsibility, even if he was in Video Village or wasn't physically there at the moment, to be able to say that I'm still the director, this still should not have happened, or, you know, we're going to make sure that something like this is taken care of in the future. And that's what a good director would, or any type of leader, will take responsibility for the other people, because he does run that. So.
Yeah. You know, I think they're going to have a hard time with this movie. A friend of mine back home on Facebook, completely unbiased, out of the industry, said, you know, I really wanted to go.
Yeah.
But after this, I'm absolutely not
going. And I think that's exactly. I think there are a lot of people that were planning to go that now no longer will go that, like you said, are not in the industry, don't have anything to do with it. And even people that are, they're going to feel a little more uncomfortable about going to support this movie by seeing what they saw with this video, because it was a little upsetting when you watch it. You're like...
Yeah, it's still. I wanted to watch it with a grain of salt and be like, okay, it's not going to, like, they're over dramatizing this. And then
of
I
course.
Saw it and I was like, well, they were in a way, but it was still, it was enough to be able to have an opinion.
It's still enough to, it does, and it still made me feel uncomfortable when I saw it.
Right.
And it was just enough to be like, ooh.
Yeah, well,
I was thinking about my dogs and things if they were in a situation like that, and I'd be like, no, I wouldn't feel really good about that. Like, you don't walk away feeling good about that situation.
No.
That it's okay.
Yeah. Amblin Entertainment and Universal Pictures, they have canceled the press junket and the premiere, which I hate to see them cancel the premiere for a movie. You know what I mean? It's like, what's the point? You know, like, you want to have you want to celebrate the film, but I guess that they're saying that while they are reviewing, they don't want to overshadow the film with the scandal or whatever.
Exactly.
So.
And add to more of the press picking up on that, and it makes it hard to be in a celebratory mood. But it is a shame because, again, there are a lot of other people that worked on this movie that had no affiliation with that event that are probably also very big animal lovers, worked very hard. As we all know, being in the entertainment industry, how many hours you work, how non-glamorous it is. And those people look forward to the reward at the end of being able to have a night out to go actually see the finished product, to cheer for their friends that are part of the movie and then go celebrate and party afterwards. So it is a shame that it had to come to this, but it's also the right thing that they had to do in this case, and hopefully they'll be able to do something small for the people that worked on it at
hopefully,
some point anyways, so they can still enjoy that. And then, like we said, hopefully they can come to a good conclusion and make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. And it's just further proof that people really have to be careful with anything they do now, because anything is open now for videos and recordings. So you never know if you're being recorded.
No, exactly.
So you have to assume the minute you walk outside the door of your house, nothing is private anymore, and anything can be used in a way that can be used against you in a way. So you have to be extra careful, which is, you know, a whole other issue there that we could talk about forever, but...
Right. Well, PETA has denounced this as well. They're not interested in it, and they are calling for CGI of all animals in films. Now, this is very expensive and can change the game with anything. Now, other people argue that that movie, I never saw it, Life of Pi, what was that, Lion Fake? Or
yes.
It was made, But that was a huge... studio blockbuster film.
Well, and it was a whole other thing too. They're out in the water, and to be able to recreate that with an actual the animals that they had, and to do that on the little raft, and it was just something that was not going to happen in an easy way to do. So it's different. I think PETA's and I did read about that. And I think PETA's thing is almost too far extreme of getting rid of animal performers in any capacity.
I find them to be a little extra always.
Yes, they do, and of course, and that's their position. And they're going to be, but it is too far. So hopefully we can find something in the middle, but that where it makes sense, where yes, CGI is used when it makes sense for animals and not when it doesn't, because there is nothing like having a really fun scene with an actual animal. And there's nothing like that for not only the actors performing with the animals, but then to be able to watch it later there's nothing else like it. But yeah, as CGI technology gets better and things get cheaper, I think it would be easier to be able to have those type of interactions without having to put the animals in any kind of harm or just being uncomfortable. Because that's not what animals are here for.
for our
entertaining pleasure.
Yeah, I've never seen a parrot sign a contract.
Yeah, they're not getting paid for that. They're not getting, well, some dogs are, and some animals are, obviously, through their owners and all that. But, I mean, come on, realistically, they're not, you know, able to enjoy the fruits of their labor.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, Kiva, these trainers or these people that are responsible for these animals, they're the ones that are making big money.
Yeah.
That one monkey was on that show, that NBC show. Oh, I can't remember the name of it. It was an animal practice.
Oh, yeah.
And that guy, supposedly has, like, the best deal in town. Because he doesn't even do anything. And he just, by showing up with the animal, makes, you know, top billing.
Oh, it's ridiculous, right?
Well, we talk a lot about people entering the business on this podcast.
Yes.
I don't know if we're going to get Malia Obama to be on. Just to let you know.
Oh, that would be great. See, we still can't escape politics because we're still talking about Malia Obama, which is still connected. But yes, how amazing would that be to have her on?
Yeah. I mean, that would definitely up the subscriber base over on Patreon, too. Malia, 18, entering Harvard. Mm-hmm. She's had a pretty good career already with her internships over on that show, that Extant, which I always made fun of. That was such a horrible CBS show.
I know.
Horrible. I mean, I don't know what made them think that would translate to television. And then she was on that show with that other one, Lena Dunham. I don't like her on Girls.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, when you're Malia, though, what show do you want to work on?
I know. It's hard.
You
the
know?
World's your oyster when you're Malia Obama, when you're 18 years old and you're getting ready to enter the world and do your thing. So everything's
must
over
be
for
nice.
Her.
Right? Anything
show. Anything she wants, she'll be able to, you know, have someone be able to open the door for her. But it's interesting with Harvey Weinstein. I mean, knowing people that have worked with him and working with the Weinstein brothers, I've heard the horror stories that come with it.
I haven't heard too many good things either.
Yeah, so it's like interesting of the place that she would go out of all the places she could intern at. And also, I think, how's that work when you're going in as the intern to something like that, when you have such a name recognition, you know, like, it's such an awkward thing. Like, you feel like they would all be treating her with such reverence, and it's not the normal internship where you're like, go get coffee and make me 50 copies of this and clean that and, you know, the typical kind of file all these things for me. I just feel like it's going to be a very different interning experience for her than it is for the normal intern.
Right, right, yeah.
And, especially just imagining like what that's going to be like with her bosses and everything, how reverent they're going to be treating her and what she's actually going to be doing.
Right. Well, they said that it could be either marketing or development.
Yes, development. Yeah.
I mean, if I was her, just go for the development.
Right.
I mean, why not? Those are the harder positions to get. If you could get in, show up.
Yeah. I just thought it was very interesting. I'm like, both sides are just how that's going to be, how they're going to treat her. You know, what is she actually going to be doing there? Because she's not doing the normal intern filing or getting coffee for everyone sort of thing.
You know, my initial reaction was like, oh, this girl doesn't know what she's in for. Yeah. This business is not easy.
No, it's not, especially working with the Weinstein brothers. But maybe it's good to get in there and get that, you know, if it's like if you can make it there and make it in New York, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, but she does have, like we said, that advantage of being who she is. So she'll have a different experience. I think she'll be all right.
Oh, no, she'll be.
Could you imagine? Fine. Like, I mean, I think probably you could say the same. We've all been yelled at some point in this business.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who would be brave enough to do that to her.
That's what I was saying. That's exactly what I was saying. Like, how it's going to be completely different for her than it is for the normal intern going in. Being yelled at, having to do the menial tasks, you know.
Yeah, it's all very real.
She can show up and leave when she wants. Is she going to have her entourage?
I know. I always wonder if they're followed around all the time. Especially when you're working. Like, do you need to have, like, the Secret Service desk next to you?
And I also wonder how that works now, because I know the even as a former president, you get your Secret Service detail, and obviously it's less than it is for the current president. But how does it work for the kids? Because I feel like the kids don't necessarily have it, but I'd love to know, like, after their former, you know, like the Chelsea Clintons, or you see the Jenna Hager-Bush on the Today Show, and you think, does she have people? Does she have a bodyguard?
I doubt it.
You know, like, at this point, is she just walking out? And that's what I'm saying, because I think after the presidency, they don't have that intense coverage
anymore.
She's
like a private citizen again. Yeah. I think that you would lose that. On that level.
So that's going to be interesting, though, you know, to really go out in the world and be away from that bubble. We talk about bubbles all the time, but being completely out of that Washington bubble, too.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting for her. But like you said, name recognition and who she is going to go a long way, baby.
Yeah. Talking about screaming, Abby Lee Miller from Dance Moms.
God.
I wouldn't want to be this woman. I would. Never really. But even in these circumstances, even less. She is entering a two-day sentencing. And this woman, talk about a disaster. Like, this makes Teresa Giudice look like she did nothing.
Exactly, yeah. It's gross.
It's really
what
horrible.
She's accused of doing.
She could be either sentenced to prison or probation. Basically, she's concealed hundreds of thousands, quote-unquote, of dollars. This is according to Page Six, of dollars during the filing of Chapter 11.
Right.
And there's even one thing in here where she pled guilty in June to making overseas money, over $120,000 in cash, and then putting the cash in children's suitcases while they flew back to L.A.
I know. It's just so – it's gross. It's trashy. It's just – you know, it's like you want to see some of these people really – and I get it. Look, none of us wants to have to pay taxes. We all do. But nobody wants to if they don't have to. And, you know, you want to keep as much money as you can. But when you go to such lengths, that's just really gross.
Yes.
It's trashy. And I've always kind of just thought of her – in general as being that sort of way. And in fact, I almost went and worked on that show for casting at one point, and I was like, oof, I just didn't go anywhere near it.
What have you heard about working on that show?
No, that's what I've heard. It's a crazy environment, and that's why I sort of just stayed away from it. I thought, you know, it's better just staying where I'm at right now and not even going in, and especially casting, because I just feel like that would just be a very difficult job to get into.
Yeah.
But I just, I hear the horror stories about her, and you see stuff like that, and you think, that's I'm not surprised.
When she filed for Chapter 11, apparently a judge watched the show and said there's no way this woman isn't making money.
Right. I mean, yes, I can see people filing for Chapter 11 because they're not good with their money, and they've gone, and that's what at first I thought when I first had heard she'd done that. I was like, okay, she was way too extravagant. She overspent. She's in huge amounts of debt. And that happens with a lot of people, mm-hmm. especially when they start making decent amounts of money, if they don't come from it or don't know how to manage it. And so maybe it caught up with her. But then to see that, yes, in fact, she had the money, and then she's kind of squirreling it away and doing these kind of shady things, it's just it's gross.
I read this on page 6, and I thought this, 'cause at first I was like, all right, she is just going to get probation for this. There's no way they're going to make room. But then I read this, and it said, there's a court-approved bankruptcy plan to determine how much Miller's creditors would be repaid, hinged on how much wealth she reported. This is a quote. She said, quote, the judge was a fill-in-the-blank. Miller wrote in February of 2013 in an email to her accountant. He hates me. I'm paying everyone I owe 100% back in one big check. Who does that? Nobody in bankruptcy. And then in another 13 email with the subject line, let's make money and keep me out of jail. You know, casual.
Yeah, right.
She instructed her accountant and business partner not to deposit any money in her bank accounts. All right. Then after that, I said, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Bye. And you deserve it.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I'm saying. You deserve going to jail when you're blatantly doing stuff to get around it.
And disrespecting the judge, too.
I mean, you are blatantly going out of your way to make sure that that money is not accounted for. And so when you're doing something that blatant, then you definitely deserve jail.
Yeah. Well, she could face up to 30 months. You know, wouldn't it be shocked? I bet that she'd get, like, the Martha Stewart treatment.
She would. And that's the thing. She would get the Martha Stewart treatment, and she'd be in a low security type prison and country club style, you know? Like,
yeah. Like Lucille Bluth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yes, well.
Spa days and.
Yeah, Abby, I don't know. I mean, you look. Not only do you look like an idiot screaming on television, but now you really look bad.
You do.
I mean, I don't. You're a prime target for those women now. Mm-hmm. Those moms who we're still supposed to believe are sitting around waiting for their kids to finish dance.
Right.
I saw something earlier later last year. It was like November, and it was like the return of Dance Moms. I couldn't believe that show was still on.
I didn't realize it either, and that's when I was approached to work on it last summer. So it must have been for the season that came out in November, because I like don't even bother anymore watching it. I was like, really? When I got the call, I was like, in my head, and I almost said that, I didn't realize the show was still on because I look like a complete idiot, but I really didn't. So it's interesting you brought that up.
Yeah.
I thought it was done a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that's still watching
it. I don't either.
To me, it's always the same thing.
Yeah, I got bored. Yeah. And
I think when she moved to LA, she kind of sold out too.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And I think it kind of changed the dynamic a little bit of what it was, because it did. It kind of started out as this like new interesting thing, but then you move to LA and now it's just like everybody else with another thing, and it's old and tired. And
right, that show to me just screams fake. It just, you know, it just I can't get into certain shows.
No,
like
I can't
that
either when they're so extreme fake.
I like the old school. Like, I'm looking at Celebrity Apprentice, and that show's a little harder to manipulate, I think, in certain ways. So I like that type of stuff. Big Brother. Those shows, though, I think this is it for Celebrity Apprentice.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah. It's sort of on its way out. And I still never forget covering that podcast on Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump with you a couple years ago.
If only we knew. Only we knew when we were eating the ice cream.
I know, we were eating the ice cream on air.
Yeah, that was when the biggest problem was if Meatloaf was up to be fired. That was a different time.
But no, it's interesting because I think you're right about a show like Celebrity Apprentice and I was kind of following with Carney Wilson because I follow her on Twitter. It was a random story. Like, I met her a couple years ago.
She's cool. I like her.
She's great. And we actually follow each other on Twitter just randomly. Like, because she'd come up. I forget the restaurant there in Studio City with the jazz club. And I can't think of the name of it now. Vitello's, maybe? I'm just totally drawing a blank. I'll look it up. But
Oh, the piano bar?
Yeah, the one right there on
yeah, Vitello's. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she was there, and it was one of those random things where she was coming around having desserts to everybody because she makes these desserts and was making them for the restaurant, like herself, because she lived around the corner. And she's literally going around to everyone at each table and giving little samples of the dessert out of Tupperware and telling everybody to try it and just see what they thought of it, because she was going to be making one of the desserts, I guess, the next night at the restaurant, and she was making their desserts. Apparently, she'd had a company and then she kind of gave it up and she was doing that.
How random.
It was. And I started, and I was there with my friend and we just started talking. We had this really great conversation. We actually had mutual people that we knew. It was only in Hollywood things. And we just became Twitter friends. And so I watched that first episode, and I hadn't watched Celebrity Apprentice since we did the podcast for AfterBuzz a couple of years ago.
Yeah, years.
Because it was sort of like, kind of tired of it. And she was on it, and of course she got booted off after the first episode.
Right. That was a loss.
But I watched it because she was on it, and I was like, I was supporting her on Twitter. And actually the parent company, Carnival Cruise Lines, is doing a lot of donating to the charities this year on the show. And that's actually, I work for three shows that are main sponsored by them as well. So we're all connected in some weird way.
Yes.
Long story short, but it was just one of those weird Only in Hollywood nights. And then we connected on Twitter, and we basically stayed like Twitter friends.
That's great. Yeah.
And now she's trying to do her company again on the side, making these desserts. And she makes incredible desserts, and I follow that one on Twitter too, and I'm like, oh my god.
I bet. Good for her.
She's really sweet, and she's one of those people that's sort of the way they are in real life. Like,
I
just
can tell.
So down to earth, just having conversation. I mean, it was the weird, like, just walking up to people at the restaurant. We were outside too. And she came up with her daughter and was like giving out of a Tupperware. It was like the weirdest thing. It was down to earth, but really cool, but very normal, like very just nice. And that's always nice.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah, so it makes it nice.
That's rare, kids. It's very rare.
And someone that's somewhat normal too. I mean, I guess you could say it's not always normal to walk up and have a Tupperware full of, desserts, but she does make them for the restaurant, so it wasn't like she was completely just walking up and like selling them or something.
What's her name on
Dance Moms is gonna do once she goes to Bank Abby. Yeah, I was thinking Amy. I'm like, I can't think of her name. Yeah, Abby's gonna have to do that. She's gonna have to go and sell desserts now to pay off all of her creditors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's gonna have to do a lot of work. I don't envy her.
No, I do not. But she also deserves it too. She's one of those people I think when you do that and you're hubris and you get too big and you think you can get away with stuff, then you know what? You
it
get what you deserve.
Back.
It does.
It
and you
back.
Get what you deserve. So I don't feel sorry for her in one iota.
Well, someone who's looking to turn things around, Lindsay.
I'm like, turn the beat around.
Well, Lindsay, we have to report this because this is just a prime, ripe for the picking story for Grant's Rants.
Yes.
Is she transitioning to Islam?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think she is. I mean,
I don't either. And, I feel like we had a Lindsay story last time in the summer, too. I was like, how did she still pop up? Like, what?
Lindsay's a regular on this show.
She is, but I'm like, how did she still pop up? Because I read the story and everything, and I'm thinking, what has she even been doing? Which is great that she's still sort of out there because she's not really even doing that much.
No.
And she's had her own
doing nothing.
Personal demons and issues to get through. Which it sounds like that she's turning a corner.
Mm-hmm.
Good for her, if she's exploring stuff. I get trying to search out religions and stuff. I remember when I was coming out and trying to figure out like what church was going to kind of support me. This was a long time ago. This was back in the early turn of the century, way before anything was really as open as it is now. And growing up Catholic and not feeling like you fit in. So I kind of went on this whole with a group of friends, like trying to find a cool church and went to different ones every week and tried to kind of figure out and sort of dabbled in Buddhism. I was just, fascinated with all that stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe I could give her the credit that maybe it's something of like trying to just see what else is out there and learning about it, but actually converting to it. I don't know if she's going to that point yet. And if it's more of just a media, get my name back out there and do something maybe a little edgy and something that maybe will raise some eyebrows.
See, people like Lindsay don't commit to things. I can't.
Well, I don't think she would either.
Change.
No.
But however, she did commit to wiping her social media.
Yes.
I miss her on Snapchat because
I know.
She would put on that Snapchat filter with like the round the headpiece.
Oh my god.
The headpiece. And she would always put like the looks of this trouble. The trouble making glare.
Yeah,
and I miss having her on there because that was when she didn't have the accent. So I want to keep up.
I know the accent.
When she decided
to
use it and when she didn't. So I miss her on Snapchat. But it's kind of weird that it's funny. It's like she wiped all her photos, but she didn't get rid of her verified accounts. She's still there.
Of course.
So there's still the door is still open.
Yeah, it's still open there. So maybe she'll make a comeback when she finishes the conversion to Islam. And we'll see. I can get where that's coming from my own personal experience.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's any more than just let's get it out there and keep myself relevant in some way and do something that maybe would be like, raise some eyebrows for people that live in wherever in the middle of nowhere that might be We're like, oh, there we go. You know, her doing something controversial, which is not, but, you know, some people
right.
would.
Right, it makes a headline. They say yeah. that she is
she's
educating
trying to change,
herself.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's what her mom said in the quote.
Right, like, oh, we have to talk
kids
about
kids.
Anytime I quote.
Anything that Dina, I know.
Anytime I can quote Dina, so I highlighted the quote. Dina, she, I love how they always call up Page Six.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter what this Lindsay does, she, mm-hmm. the parents, the father, too.
Oh, he's Michael's just as bad.
There's so quick to call to make a statement.
Yeah.
Dina told Page Six that she quote, "I have raised my children to be compassionate and to educate themselves on a global level, to learn about different cultures and their practices and to respect them." Well, that's good. I hope that she really did. I don't know if she really did. But
I think she was busy partying with her daughter for so many years, so maybe she meant that in a way of like they partied globally and got drunk globally and danced in a lot of different clubs globally. But you know what? Again, I'm going to take it in her word that she's looking into it, and I think it's great. I personally would like to learn more about Islam and everything. Mm-hmm. So if she is, good for her. But yeah, I think it's more of the let's get it out there and try to do something edgy to get herself in the news.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lindsay, I give you my blessing. I think everyone needs a little spiritual enrichment these days.
Yeah,
so I hope
yes,
that
spiritual
I hope,
cleanse.
Yes, I hope that it's with the best of intentions.
Mm-hmm. I hope so too. Let's hope. Here's hoping.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Listen anytime on all major podcasting platforms and YouTube for bonus content. And now, back to the show.
And we're back talking with Scott Moore, and we're going to be doing some TV talk.
TV
and
talk.
Yes.
It's a good thing for me because I watch way too much of it.
Yes. I'm behind in a lot of my shows. It's just because I'm watching too much.
I know.
So I prioritize certain ones.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm so far behind. And now, you know, there's so much more with the Netflixes and the Amazons and the Hulus of the world to even stay up to date, too, because there's so much great content out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost too much.
Yeah, well, there's more coming, a lot coming, actually, especially if you're a Ryan Murphy fan, because I loved that O.J. Simpson
show. I did, too.
I think it was very well-deserving of the Emmys it received. I was very happy to see that. Now, the new second season is coming in 2018, so don't wait by the television.
Yeah, you got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And it was such a tease when they said that. I'm like, no, I have to wait that long?
I know. It's such a quality show.
Yeah, but, you know, and this is one thing without getting too far off the rails here, but...
Sure.
Did you find the OJ show interesting and there was this dichotomy with some of the leads seeming kind of campy and then the other ones with like the real acting? Like I kind of, you know, it's like John Travolta and Nathan Lane and everything. I just felt like, oh, they're so... And Cuba Gooding Jr., it felt kind of campy.
Well, even the Faye Resnick character.
And that's... Oh, God, yeah, like so campy and over the top. But then on the other side, you had, like, Sterling K. Brown, and you had...
wonderful,
Sarah... Why am I forgetting her last name right now?
Oh, yeah.
Marsha Clark's character. Sarah
Paulson.
Yeah, it's not Sarah Hayden. Sarah
it was
Paulson.
Wonderful.
It was incredible.
She's one of the few actresses I love watching
I do, too. And she's so great, and she just became Marsha. And it was just this weird dichotomy of seeing this kind of over-the-top campiness versus this really great, like, actors acting... again, great show, and I enjoyed it very much, and I totally agree with you. It definitely deserved all the Emmys, and it was just really, really, really well done. But that was the only thing I thought was very fascinating watching that show was how different it was on the style of acting from the lead sort of and some of the other people in the show. But yeah, such a great show. So I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, FX seems to be building them up. Like they're going to put them out 6 months apart from each other, season 2 and 3.
Yep.
2 is going to be about the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Yes, which also I can't wait for, too.
A crime in and of itself.
Is a crime, and I'm a big, huge weather nerd, and I, you know, remember it very well. I actually had flown into Florida the couple days before from here in Los Angeles to go back to visit and home where I'm from, and it hit South Florida, so we were literally flying in. We had to divert because of the storm, and of course we know what happened afterwards. It became a major catastrophe, and I cannot wait for that one too. I cannot wait for that one, and it's interesting.
I know it'll be done well.
I do too, and it's interesting they're focusing on that one because it's a crime in its own way, but in a different way, and it's such a unique thing to cover as opposed to a lot of the entertainment sensational things like the Lewinsky scandal and the OJ trial and all these other things that it's a very different take on it. So I'm fascinated to see how they're going to cover it. And right. and I love New Orleans. I love the culture and the mix of politics and the music and the food. And so in itself, New Orleans is its own vivid character that I hope and I know that Ryan Murphy's going to make sure that that is really played out as his own vivid, amazing, incredible character. Like yeah. if you ever saw Treme on HBO, same people that did Oz, and it was just amazing because Treme focuses on a small district there right after Hurricane Katrina. And again, the music, because it's all about the musicians, and they really just brought this whole area to life and its own character, and it was just, it's so good. So I'm very excited about the Katrina one. Yeah. But again, it's too long. It's like 2018. I'm like, yeah, why do I have to wait so long?
I know. I'm going to forget about
why
it.
Why are you yeah. making me wait? So that'll be exciting. Yeah.
Right after that one is the Gianni Versace
one, yeah.
Which I have less of an interest in. I think that the at least because I feel like I identify with the Katrina one. I mean, I remember yeah. that weekend. Yeah. I remember a lot going on around then. That was more like prevalent in my life.
Right.
So,
and the Gianni Versace sure one, I wasn't. I knew of him, but I wasn't as invested. But that one will be fascinating too, just to see how they kind of redo it and the way it all happened and the ex like lover or you know there's so many things that kind yeah. of the kind of the conspiracy that went behind that. And
see,
then,
I'm gonna be kind of watching it like a story in and of mm-hmm. itself because I don't know that story very well. That's kind of before my time. Where with OJ, I knew a lot of bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So with watching it was like, wow, this really was quite a story. But with this Gianni Versace yeah. show, I don't know. I'm going to be educating myself along the way.
Interesting, because that was right after the OJ time period. That was like a 97, if I recall. So yeah, it was mm-hmm. It's interesting to kind of focus back on the 90s, and we're yeah. talking about that off air earlier. But it's kind of fun to bring yeah. that back now.
Well, the casting for the Monica Lewinsky yep. Bill Scandal mm-hmm. that will be very interesting. That they're using a book, they've always used a book to adapt the series off of,
yeah.
but they're looking at this story. It's called A Vast Conspiracy: The Real Story of the Sex Scandal That Nearly Brought Down a President. So it's interesting. I'm very, very curious.
Oh, I cannot wait for that too, because not only being a weather nerd, I'm also a political nerd, and I remember that time vividly as well. I was just going off to college, and you know, I just remember the period of time, and just thinking, like, kind of revisiting it, and it's interesting now to be looking back at the 90s, because we're looking at it with a touch of nostalgia. It's mm-hmm. really kind of cool, because it's just long ago now in the past, and it was sort of a time period for most people that was really comfortable, that was sort of the last age of innocence for most people, because it was before September 11th.
The internet boom.
Right, it was, yeah, exactly, when people still had privacy, when people yeah. still had a life outside of being attached to their phones and social media, and you know, the economy was good, we were in peacetime, we were not at war. It was a really good time period, but yet you also had these big sensationalistic events that were happening in the 90s that weren't always so positive. You know, you had the LA riots out here in the early 90s. Of course, you had the O.J. Simpson murder trial. You had Monica Lewinsky and all the sex scandals, and that sort of bring down all those other congressmen in the late 90s. So it's and JonBenet Ramsey, all those
right.
different
yeah, yeah.
Big sensationalistic, and that was sort of also the start of the big following all these sensationalistic cases and crimes,
yes.
and when that became a big thing, and you know with 2020 and all those the
Nancy
Dateline
Gray screaming,
yes, and that was in 94 exactly, and you had, and that's when like the news magazines became all a rage on TV, and they would be out like every night of the week, and so they were covering these things. So that was the big thing of that era, and it's kind of fun to revisit it now,
yeah,
as an adult from being a young adult and everything in college and high school and reflecting on it. So I think it's fun, and Ryan Murphy is so great. I mean, he's a brand in himself, and the way he brands and boxes up these individual types of shows and things that he does is so brilliant, because it's such a great way of being able to do something new every season that you wouldn't think of doing.
Right, yeah, and like, just the stuff that he does, whether you're a fan of his writing or not, the production value is always on point.
It's always on point, and the great thing about it is the way that's branded is that you can really do anything. You can go from as wide as covering Hurricane Katrina to Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
To like, really, like the options are endless. And it's fun because every season you can have a whole new cast and you can do
yeah.
whole new act things.
So great.
And that's what he does with with his shows for the most part now, and that's really, you know, like American Horror Stories and all that.
Yeah, I want to see him cover the Michael Jackson trials. I really am so curious how he would go about that, because that's still so sensitive.
It's still so sensitive, right, and it's so touchy, but at the same time, you know, the it's hard too, because the main person in that story now has passed away, so...
Yeah.
How do you cover that?
And
what
do you
do? And how sensational... I know. What was... Oh, my God. What was the guy?
Oh, we talked about it on this show.
Oh, God. We talked about... Yes. Rose Ralph.
Fiennes.
Oh, my God. What is that? I was like, is that even real?
Yes. Joseph Fiennes.
I was like, not Ralph Fiennes. Yeah. It was just... Like, how hard... Like, that was just, like, cringe...
Yeah.
Cringeworthy inducing. I'm like... This can't be real.
Yeah. So, do you cast a black man? Do you cast a biracial man? Do you, how do you do it where you don't offend people, or do you? But then it turns into a comedy and a joke, kind of like what that show was in the UK.
Yeah. Right. How do you do it in a way that would be? And I think that's maybe why it hasn't been touched. It's sort of such a electric. Hot wire to be able to do that, because how do you do it in a way that isn't offensive?
Mm-hmm. I think he could do it, though. I think Ryan Murphy could do it.
No, I think he could too, and maybe it is with a biracial person, but how do you do it and do it in a way that's realistic, and when you're dealing with makeup and you're changing somebody's look, and it's very sensitive, and it's very difficult to do so.
Perhaps still too soon, I think.
Yeah, I think so, but I think it's definitely, I agree with you, I think that would be a really great one for him to cover, and I'm pretty sure that's probably already in his thought. I'm sure he probably has a list of things
John
he's going to cover
forever. Yeah.
For this thing could go on forever.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's take a look at the TCAs. The Winter Press Tour has been going on, looking at what's coming up in television. There's some decisions being made on what's getting the acts and what's continuing and different announcements. Looking at NBC, which just stuck out to me, not biased, but just, you know, just taking a look, by no means am I just kind of looking at what they have. You know, Will and Grace is making a return this year into 2018.
So yeah, which is very exciting. That's coming back. It's sort of kind of taking the lead of other shows that are coming back, like Fuller House and, you know, and actually using the original cast. And it's... You know, on one hand, you're like, okay, do we have to do the retreads? But on the other hand, as a fan of the show, I'm very excited to bring it into the current day. And it's such a pop cultural phenomenon. But, you know, if The Cosby Show comes back, I think that's going to be a step too far. But then again,
we don't need The Cosby Show. No.
You know, maybe it just focuses on the gynecological issues and sleep studies. But if we have that happening, that's a little too far. And we don't need the Twilight Zone to come back. We're already living that here.
No, that's true. Yeah, no,
every day.
Yeah, we don't need that. I am I'm all for a reboot in certain ways.
Certain
However,
times, yeah.
We're a long ways off, but I know there'll be a rebirth of the Riggy reality shows coming back. And I just want to put out in the universe... The Flavor of Love needs to be back on my television. I will pay per view that if it comes back. But I just want to put that out in the world. Why we're talking about these shows,
these monumental. You have reboots and come back and everything. Yeah,
Flav needs the money. I've said it on their show before. Flav needs the money. He'll work for nothing.
He'll work.
Just
it'll be cheap. It'll be great. Yeah.
Yes. So Will and Grace, I actually didn't really watch that growing up. I really didn't.
Yeah.
But through LA and through television, and I very much know what it's all about, and I think it's funny, and I loved the September reunion they had. So fitting, all of the different characters' stance on the election, like it just fit like a glove. You know?
It was brilliant, and obviously it was so brilliant that they were like, hey, why not bring it back now? Because everyone they saw the attention it got, and how everyone loved it, and it just. Kind of made sense.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Fuller House and like Arrested Development.
Arrested Development that came back.
Network shows that came back, but on a digital platform.
Exactly.
I like that NBC, and they said that they did whatever they could to keep this on network,
which I think was great that they actually brought it back.
Yeah, and
brought it back to them. I think it is smart, and I think they see the success of these other shows that come back, like Fuller House. I think is a prime example. It's already coming back for a third season. And I think they felt like, well, we might as well jump on this because clearly it has a lot of popularity still, and it's smarter to keep it in their own library and everything, and letting that one get away.
Yeah. So they kept all of the same back-end deals and distribution deals, but they had to cut way back on the compensation because these people were making upwards of almost $600,000 an episode, which those days are long gone.
Yeah, I know, right? It's interesting, though, because you would feel like, do they have to prove themselves again to be able to make that money? Like, if they're going to do a 10-episode, are they planning on keeping it going? Or is it one of those things like, I mean, I'm sure what it's going to be is like, let's do 10 episodes and wait and see.
Yeah.
But it is kind of an interesting thought because they're coming back, and yet they're going to have to come back for less money. And they've already, and it's the same show, and it's interesting.
And some of right, them, it's, some of those names are arguably bigger now than they
yeah,
were.
That's
from
what
the
I'm
show.
Saying. Yeah. So, It's fascinating that they're taking less money, but I guess they're going to kind of sort of go back and prove themselves again to be able to say, hey, we are worth $600K an episode again. And if it is, then they'll get it, you know?
Yeah, well, I'll be looking at it.
I'll be fascinated to see how it does ratings-wise.
Yes,
and
it will
because,
be an interesting study.
You know, it's even though a lot of people are fans or anything, so much has changed in that period, in the 10 years since they left. And is that show going to still work, and in what way? And it's a very different time period, and sometimes shows work because of the time period they're in, and you bring them back and they may not work in the same way.
That's true. That's very true.
Full House was long enough of a period, and you could recreate it with adults and sort of like Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World, which is now being canceled from Disney, but it's that same theory where now they're adults and it's the next generation, and you could kind of see how that would play out. But something when you're bringing it is a whole Arrested Development similar, but it also in a way wasn't as, it was always sort of a non-traditional small rated show to begin with, but it's an even bigger risk to take a network sitcom and bring it back with the same characters that have not really aged, because they're basically keeping them in the same way.
Yeah.
And then try to recreate that in a different time, and it's going to be fascinating to see how that works or not. But maybe it will.
Right. Like, I didn't find that Arrested Development worked, really.
I didn't either. That's what I was saying. Yeah. It didn't work, but at the same time, it was also very unique, specific.
Right. They've locked in contracts, though, for those new, or I think salaries. They locked in salaries for the new people over on Arrested Development. And I want to see that show come back so they can repair whatever they did last time, and then maybe we should leave it alone.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's hard, and you know, like, even like Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming back, which I'm excited about because I've always loved that show, and I would like the comeback. Speaking of coming back, I love the comeback to come back, and that was fascinating because it went an entire decade too, and it came back and essentially worked in the same way, but it was an HBO show. It was a different kind of setup. I think this with Will and Grace is such a unique experiment, and I'm gonna be fascinated to see how it works, because they're bringing everybody back, like the writers to the
director
and executive producer. So they're like bringing everybody back. And so to me, that's what's going to be. It's going to be like a test experiment to see how that's going to work.
Yeah.
And what are they going to do now, 10 years later?
Right.
And where are these characters going to be at this point? And how is that going to work? So it'll be fun to see.
Yeah. Well, NBC is also kind of like, I feel like back in the day, like in 2008, 2009, things were canceled so much. You never got invested in a show because you just, I mean, this was me. I just figured that it was going to be canceled. If it
I know.
Good.
Yeah. They wouldn't give it any time at all.
No.
They would show maybe two episodes and it's gone.
And ABC is guilty of that too, especially the last, like, I think 2 years ago. I mean, things were on for like a week.
Yeah.
And then they were off. Now, like even last year, we talked about it on this show, a lot of these networks kind of letting these shows play out because they ordered them, they have them, they paid for them.
Well, and it's true. It's a little different now, too, that they do. They end up paying a lot for them, and they'd rather give them the chance because if you only give two or three episodes, you want to make sure that people now, because they record things and it's not at all like it used to be, people wait and they want to watch a couple of them in a row when they have time. So
that's what I do.
Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily work in the old model where you would play it on Tuesday night at 9 and everyone would be home to watch it Tuesday night at 9. And if they missed it, they knew that a rerun would come back, or they would do an encore performance, you know, at 9:30 or the following week before. Now it's like they need to kind of give these shows the chance, the time to breathe a little bit, because people aren't necessarily watching it right away.
Right, yeah.
They're coming to it later, or they're watching it maybe 3 or 4 weeks later with their busy lives doing other things. And at that point, if the show's already gone, nobody's going to watch it. And then they're wasting money. And it's very expensive to produce these shows. I mean, you think of then they pilot season, and it still happens now, but there's a lot of pilots that never see the light of day. I've worked in quite a few of them myself in the past, and it's a lot of money. You put a lot into it.
For no product.
For nothing. Yeah. So, you know, it's a smart move to be able to let these shows have the chance to breathe a little bit more, and, you know, now that people's viewing habits have changed quite a bit, and give them the opportunity to do this before they just pull the plug.
Right. Well, if you were thinking of investing in This Is Us, that show's going to be around for a while.
Yes, it is.
So you might as well, I told my mom, I was like, it's picked up for 2 seasons, so you don't have to worry about it getting canceled.
Yeah.
Like you can invest into it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's sort of a newer tactic, too, because a lot of times, and it's very bold, because a lot of times, you know, executives and networks and everything don't want to risk putting anything out there that they are not going to get a return from. So that's why a lot of times they're very, very sensitive about doing that. But we've started to see it more on the cable side. Like, you'd see shows like Archer and things that were pretty safe that had been out there for a long period of time get the 2-season pickup. But it's pretty rare to see a brand new show that's been around for half a season on a network be picked up for 2 back-to-back seasons. But it's a great thing. That means they believe in it. And the other smart tactic is that it's a way to be able to lock in everybody, lock in the cast, lock in everybody at a pretty decent rate. Obviously, they're all going to get bigger numbers now because they kind of went in lower numbers, which happens. And sort of like, hey, let's prove ourselves. Now they'll come in and ask for all the things they want to ask for, and they're clearly going to be all paid more and everything else. But it's a smart tactic on their part because now they can lock them in. They don't have to worry about it anymore. They've got the time slot taken care of, and now they can focus on growing the rest of their stuff. So NBC's in a really good place right now of regrowth and rebranding because they had quite a few years where, you know, they were kind of out in the desert there on programming.
That's true. They really have turned around. I mean, this show gets a 14.6 average rating, and then for 18 to 49, 4.6.
Yeah.
Live. I mean,
live. And that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, those days are so long gone. Even Jen Psaki, the president over there, said that they're like, that's like their priority. Like, they will do anything for that show.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that they have a good scripted primetime drama that they value, and that it's we can all, you know, if you're a fan of it, it's going to be here.
And it's great. And I think I think that's why it's really hit home, because it has that kind of 30-something parenthood kind of vibe to it. And the way they deal with the back in time stuff is fun. And the way they take the music in there, it's not cheesy, it's great soundtracks, and it really walks that fine line between being too cheesy as far as the scripting and being a really good tearjerker, good acting, and you know, like we were saying, for such an ensemble cast, they really had to lock in those people. Because it's an ensemble cast, it's not like
you can just do without
it. Yeah. It's sort of like the Will and Grace. You've got to get everybody on board or it's not the same. If you can't have Will and Grace without Will or Grace, you know. And it's the same thing with this type of show. You can't just all of a sudden replace it because they're all so integral to the show and the storytelling and the way that it plays out, that it wouldn't work if all of a sudden you didn't have one of the main actors there, because they're all important. They're all kind of equal here as an ensemble cast. They're all important to the story and to the plots and everything. So, good for them. It's very exciting, and I'm excited that they're making a move now.
Yeah, I need to catch up on the show.
You're saying to your mom, you don't have an excuse now. You can catch up now too. Yeah. But on the plus side, you can take your time because you know it's going to be around.
True.
So that's a good thing too.
Yeah. Also announced was that the Esquire cable network is done starting in the summer. It had lost a lot of carrier deals like AT&T and Charter. I guess they don't carry it. And they said now it's only like an audience of 40 million people that actually get that channel, which is a very small fraction of the cable market.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah. And as things become more competitive... I don't want to be like, oh, I told you so, but I had actually worked at the time for G4, which, you know, was owned by Comcast and went through the merger with NBC back in 2011. And, you know, their thought was there was only so much growth that they could do with the platform G4 at the time, because it was centered around kind of the nerdy video gamer, comic book guy. How could they really expand the audience? And they, you know, they definitely tried to. And there were a lot of diehard fans that said it kind of lost its touch of what it was supposed to be, because when it came into Comcast collection back, like way back in the early 2000s, it really got away from its original video game centric programming. But they really did try to adapt through the years, and they had really had started to really expand out and get pretty decent numbers. And when NBC came in, they thought, well, now we want to go after a different type of male. And we thought, okay, it's sort of like starting from scratch, because yeah. instead of trying to grow from what you had, you were going after a whole different audience. Long story short, they ended up not doing that with G4, did it with Style Network instead, because they had a lot of female-centric networks. But even when we were leaving, this was in 2013, 2012, I thought, it'll be lucky if it sticks around for 5 years, because I think it's hard to for that type of programming to last, and sure enough, it made it about 4, so it almost made it. But, you know, it's a shame that it didn't work out, because I know a lot of people that were still there that had been there and made it through all of the acquisitions and everything else, and finally at this point got laid off, because they laid off the majority of the people. But it's also going to digital now, and I think that's the way of the future. And I remember several years ago thinking, oh, digital's just so it's nothing. It's like the Wild West. There's no real budgets. There's money. No real anything.
Yeah.
Now, like, the high-quality stuff is there, so it's smart that they're still going to keep it in a digital capacity. I think they'll still be able to do things, but it also shows, like, the way the future is going to be digital. Yep. And like I've said for years now, there's going to be a marrying of linear TV to digital, and they're going to kind of blend. And we see that with the Netflixes of the world now, and Amazon Prime and Hulu, where you watch original programming through a streaming digital service now.
I always wonder what it would be like when the cable bubble stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to the... Are there just going to be like some dead networks out there? Because...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's no plans to do anything with this network. G4 is still floating out there.
Well, I think it's finally dead.
They finally got rid of it.
It was sort of a graveyard. I think, you know, this is sort of going to be a bigger discussion for other things someday, but I think you're going to see this a la carte thing become more of a reality with cable becoming more able to be taken with you on the road. So, like, the HBO... you know, Go, where you can now watch it. And you don't.
I wish I had that. Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, you can have that now without actually being a cable subscriber to HBO on your cable. You can now just have it as a standalone option, and I feel that is really going to become the way of the future.
Absolutely.
So now it'll be a la carte. It'll be standard. If you want to just have ESPN, you can get the ESPN app and watch it. You can, you know, have different things of what you want instead of having 1,000 channels on your cable like I have at home, and I sit there and think, like, I watch, you know, maybe... 20 of them if I'm lucky, not even. But, you know, you see all that and you're like, that's a waste, and they're going to have to do something about it. So I think a la carte is going to be the future, and like we see, there's going to be more blending of the digital world with linear, and it's going to be a whole new world. It's exciting, but it's also scary.
Yeah, it is. Especially
for
when
people
you're
working
in it.
Yes. Like we do. We work in TV. We make TV. How's that going to be in the future? And there's definitely kind of starts and stops with it. And I worked on digital shows last year, and I'm back to working on linear shows now. But in the same way, those shows could easily be taken back to digital. And you'd have the same type of budgets, and you'd have the same type of show producing and stylistic approaches that you would if it was a regular TV show. So, you know, it'll basically be the same thing. It'll just be for a different platform.
Yeah. What are some shows that you're working on that you can talk about?
I just am wrapping up the ones I think I was talking about last summer. They're all on Saturday morning TV. They all are sponsored mainly by, like, Carnival and the cruise line industry. One is called Ocean Treks. That wrapped earlier this fall, and it has Jeff Corwin as a host, and it airs on Saturday mornings on ABC right now. And then the other one was called The Voyager, and that's on NBC, actually doing very well, because you can also watch it on NBC.com and see the entire episodes. And that is on Saturday morning. And then the third one is Vacation Creation for the CW network on Saturday mornings as well. So it's all Saturday morning TV, just encouraging people to kind of maybe think about traveling and maybe travel by a cruise ship. So if a lot of people have not traveled internationally, it's a nice, easy, safe option.
I like travel TV.
And it's great, and it's fun, and each of them kind of target a different group of people. The Ocean Treks is a little more adventurous for the people that want to go off and do more adventurous things. The Voyager has a little bit more of the culture and the food and the arts and crafts and things that you could do when you visit a port. And then Vacation Creation is giving families a needed vacation, kind of once-in-a-lifetime trip via a cruise ship. And it's just a different way to travel. You know, it's a way of, like, people could, if they feel comfortable, they can go out on their own and explore an international country. But if they feel more nervous or are not much into traveling in the past, it's a great way because you have this whole community around the ship. It's like a floating Vegas hotel. Because you have the casino and the shows and the spa and the gym and the pool and the bars and the restaurants. And you can just stay on the ship when it goes in the port and take some pictures and everything. So it's a nice in between, and it's kind of fun, and I've enjoyed it. It was a very challenging show because I had three at once. 78 episodes, and I was managing them all that were all over the world from right here in Los Angeles. So the last show finally wraps next week, and I'm hoping for a little break.
Yeah, I think you're ready for a
Yeah,
break.
Definitely. Dealing with all over the world people
every day. Yeah, that's a lot.
All weekends, every all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely everyone should check them out. They're a lot of fun, and you know, they're evergreen programming, so it's not like you have to see episode one to watch episode seven, because they're in the middle of their runs right now. They started in October. And they will go through all the way until May, because of 26 original episodes. So, you know.
Man, that's a good order, yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So hopefully they'll be back. Yeah.
And I know you've been working on the Trump report.
I haven't.
AfterBuzz TV.
Yes. I've been covering, I covered the whole political campaign, Trump versus Hillary, we did for AfterBuzz from July, from when the convention started all the way through the fall campaign. I've come back and been covering the transition and now to the actual beginning of the presidency for Trump. And I'm getting myself out there with the political stuff. Hopefully I'm going to be doing a segment for Jimmy Kimmel next week, if that'll come through on the political stuff. So that's why I said it's nice to escape it a little bit, because I'm always covering it and doing everything with it. So,
I asked you last week, I said, how do you keep your blood pressure low?
I know.
How do you do it?
It's very hard, and especially when things come up, you know, like today, but it's like, it's nice to be able to have the escapism of such great TV programming and entertainment and movies and that's what kind of gets you through it, and you know, having great friends and kind of escape from all that too.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned you were reading a book.
Oh yes, yes,
right. Chuck Klosterman.
Yes, yes, yes. He writes, and the two books I'm reading right now, I just finished that one, and then of course I went on the complete opposite tack. I'm reading Kathy Griffin's latest book too, on all of her celebrity meetings and everything.
You must balance
fun.
It out.
You have to balance it out, because you go from reading her stuff on her celebrity. And she alphabetizes it too. It's so funny. You have to go from that to reading Chuck Klosterman, who's just in the weeds, really smart, brilliant guy. I've read several of his books. And this one's like, What If We're Wrong? And it's basically taking something from 500 years from now. And what are people going to be focusing on? What do they think about is the big thing of like what the world's like now, you know, with the Donald Trump presidency and the Brexits and you know, the global climate change.
I imagine that would be a large part.
And that was part of some of the stuff that he brings up in the book. But, you know, he really goes off the rails and really makes your head hurt almost, because he talks about multiverses and what if we're part of a game simulation all these crazy things that he does. But he just brings it up and he's like, who's to say that's wrong? And then, like, what are the things that we think of now, like gravity, that, you know, back in the past they had a different look at it. What do they think about it now? What are they going to think about gravity in 500 years if they find out a whole other thing about it? So everything that we think is true is essentially saying may not be, because in the future they'll find out it's not what we thought it was.
Wow.
So it's like, it kind of really, like, messes with your head, but it's fascinating because it really does bring up these really – like crazy topics about that. I'm like, I guess we could be a game simulation. I could see that. It's like, you know, the election of Donald Trump, or the whatever's going on in the world with our reality shows, and all this stuff could just be part of a bigger thing.
Or,
you know, the multiverses with all everything's going on, but it's like every other decision that you could be making, but it's in a different universe. But
like Black Mirror.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like there's every single possible outcome is done, but in a different universe. Yeah. So you're your same person, but in a different universe playing that same role. It's like, it's crazy. But I think if you really want
to,
like,
have to recap the
exactly. It's a balance. So if you really want to have the you know, really just kind of think about something and get out of your head and escape in a way and think, then it's a great book. It just came out last year. It's like, What If We're Wrong by Chuck Klosterman. So I love to just definitely check out stuff like that every once in a while.
Yeah,
too.
That's great.
Make me think.
Yeah.
What I would normally think.
Absolutely. It gives you a different POV.
Yeah, absolutely.
On life. Yeah.
I think that's important.
Yeah. Well, great. Where can we keep up with you? If you're interested, you can always check out Scott over on the Trump Report at AfterBuzz.
Yes, every Tuesday night we're there around 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, and we actually did a special one yesterday that just aired that's up from the actual inauguration. We went in at like 11 a.m. on a Friday and recorded it. So that's up. And then, of course, you can just follow my antics and probably all of my crazy political posts. But, you know, you can follow everything going on mainly on Twitter at SMAN80. That's SMAN80. And I'm also on Instagram at ScottMoore80 because I can never get my name. So I always have to do a combination of numbers or whatever. But those are definitely the two best places to find me, and I'm pretty good about responding to people and everything and interacting on Twitter. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Great.
Yeah, thank you for having me back again.
Thanks for
having
me chatting. Yeah, well, I hope you all found this interesting. You know, we talked about a lot.
We
did. Especially TV and a little bit of a break from the intensity of what's going on outside these four walls.
That's right.
Please check out Grant's Rants over on Patreon. And if you're interested in supporting me, that would be wonderful. As always, there'll be more rants to come. Stay tuned.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grant's_rants. Cover art created by Howie Rone. Voiceover by Blake V. Media. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arntzen.